have loved you anyway.
If you had just looked once or twice
and gone upon your quiet way.
Hey everybody, welcome again to F This Movie, the official podcast of FThisMovie.com, movie love for movie lovers. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I'm super excited for our show this week. It's time for our annual holiday episode, the 2017 holiday show. As always, for the holiday episode, I am joined by the king of all holidays, Adam Riske.
I am so excited to reclaim our holiday crown because last year we were both sick.
Yeah, what happened? Did we just kind of whiff it last year?
We were really miserable, I remember, while we were recording
it. Was that White Christmas, Black Christmas?
Yeah.
We were off our game a little
bit. We were very off our game. Yeah. And like, yeah, I think I had it. I know I did, at least. I had a sore throat. And I could barely talk. And it was rough.
I don't remember. And then what, 2 years ago was just like our favorite holiday movies?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. This one's going to knock both of those on its ass.
100%.
Yes.
100%.
Yeah.
Happy holidays to all of you listening. We will talk about this week's movie a little bit later on. We have been teasing it for a few weeks. It is a movie celebrating its 20th anniversary this very month.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yes.
So we're excited to talk about it. But first, of course, we must talk about what we have seen lately.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, both of us have seen Star Wars The Last Jedi. If you have not been paying attention to our feed, we did release a special episode on that. We were joined by Heather Wixon and Robin Buckley, where we got to talk The Last Jedi for almost 90 minutes. So do check that out. But Adam Riske, have you seen anything good lately?
Yeah, I've got a barrage of stuff.
I can't wait.
Okay. I think we should start out by talking about a certain holiday movie.
Mm, oh, shit. That's why. You don't think we should say that till last? You want to open with that one? I'm fine.
And by certain holiday movie, I mean Roman J. Israel Esquire.
I thought you were going there.
I actually was, but if you want to pivot.
No. Let's
if you want to pivot. If you want to pivot? Are you into the pivot?
I don't know. Now I don't know what to do.
Speaking of pivoting,
yeah.
Were you disappointed that Lady Bird was not about a girl who was as good at basketball as Larry Bird?
Yes and no. I
can
see
people being disappointed.
Yeah.
The Twitter reaction was crazy. Not enough jump shots, says Rolling Stone.
Roman J. Israel Esquire.
Did you see it?
No. Okay. And I'm not even 100% convinced that it is a movie. I think it's a Denzel Washington affect and a costume.
It is in that regard a little bit.
Okay. I don't think it's played in theaters.
Yes, it has.
I'm not convinced is what I'm saying.
What did I go see it in then?
That's what I'm wondering, because I think that this was something that a group of people dreamed and think that they saw.
I will say this. I saw it in a theater with me and one other person.
That person also didn't see this movie. You dreamed it together.
And it was a naked guy like at the end of The Doors.
Oh, then that happened, yeah.
So, yeah.
So how is that? What is it? He's a lawyer? He's a quirky lawyer?
So he's like a civil rights lawyer.
Okay.
Who is tired of... It's like falling down in the sense that he's tired
of... So I should walk to go see it.
How many miles did you walk?
Far too many.
Oh, my goodness.
More than I'm willing to walk for Roman J. Israel Esquire, one of the worst titled movies of the year.
It's a weird title. It's like one of those where if I'm typing it out, I have to check how many periods and commas are in there. But I feel obligated because of the state of Israel. So anyways. I liked it. It's definitely true what you're saying, that Denzel Washington is doing a thing. And the thing isn't always super interesting.
Yeah.
There are certain people that I have heard on other podcasts who are kind of like this guy. So I'm just like, I know people like this exist, where they're just kind of quirky and weird. And
I think I know exactly where you're going with that.
But Colin Farrell is like one of this year's MVPs for me.
Who is he in this movie?
He is
he's like the normal guy.
Yeah, he's kind of like
he's the Ben Stiller to Denzel Washington's Daryl Zero.
A little bit.
All right.
So he's kind of the audience stand-in reacting to this guy
Got
as
it.
We are. But this movie really reminded me of like one of those banana Spike Lee movies where it's just like, what is happening? Like the late 90s, early 2000s Spike Lee.
Okay.
Where it's like Summer of Sam. It's not as good as Summer of Sam.
Right.
But it's like that, or even like weird quirks like the Old Boy movie or Bamboozled and stuff like that.
Okay.
It's just so kind of unlike anything that you see in theaters right now that I liked it. And then I'm just kind of a mark for like lawyer movies. So
I like lawyer movies.
So I enjoyed it.
Okay.
It's a little long. The ending's not great.
Oh. You're really selling me on this.
It's got a lot of problems in it. But I liked it.
Okay.
So, you know.
All right.
It's a flawed movie and I'm a flawed guy. So I have watched Boiler Room 3 times in 9 days.
Is that a true statement?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
It's on, it was on a week ago Friday.
Yeah.
It was on a week ago Tuesday.
Yeah.
And, it was
and you watch it each
today,
time it's on?
Every time it's on.
Wow.
I watch Boiler Room.
Is it because it takes you back to college or do you just like legit love it?
No, I mean like I, both.
Okay.
Like, yeah. I think it's not like a great movie. It's definitely like douche auteur.
Yeah.
But, copyright Adam Risky.
I don't know if I've seen it like since maybe when I first bought it on DVD.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing it in the theater and on DVD and both times thinking, this is better than I thought it would be.
It's very entertaining.
Yeah.
It kind of doesn't measure up anymore. I think I thought it was a better movie until I saw The Wolf of Wall Street. And I'm
Got
like,
it.
Oh, that's how you really do this movie.
Right.
But the thing is, it is really spot on in the regard that when I was in high school, I took a telemarketing job as a part-time job. And within about 10 hours of you doing that job, you become a different person.
Ooh.
A much worse person.
Okay.
A bad person.
Wow.
A person where if you go back to your high school class and you're just like, you couldn't close a window, let alone this presentation. Like, it's stuff like that.
Okay.
And Boiler Room is just, like, so douche-tastic.
Yeah.
And it's got, like, the good Scott Conn, and
I was
it's
gonna
got
say,
like
is it the
good
most,
Diesel.
Is this
and,
the most Scott Conn movie ever?
Yeah, and he's just like a whack-a-mole in this movie
yeah.
where he just like pops out of a hole and beats people up
right.
and things like that. So I don't know. I like it.
Jamie Kennedy shows up with a mustache.
Yes. I'm a fan of bad Giovanni Ribisi performances because and there's a lot to choose from.
including a movie that we're gonna talk about in a little bit.
Yeah. But I like there's like him and Ron Rifkin have like this subplot
uh-huh.
where it's like their estranged father and son
right.
and then Giovanni Ribisi has like this crying scene and it always makes me laugh and he's just like I'm good at what I do dad I'm good at what I do and I love it so much. I love Boiler Room. I could watch it right now.
Great cast. Yeah. Nice to see Nia Long in anything.
She's not great in this, but it's the
maybe
part. It's how the part's written.
She's she's in Love Jones,
yeah.
so I will always like her for that. I miss New Line, like when
I
it was
too.
When New Line was cool.
Yeah.
Anyway, all right. Boiler Room, Roma J. Israel, Esquire.
I saw the Meyerowitz.
I have not watched that yet.
Give me a fucking break.
Okay.
Seriously, with that movie, like.
Okay.
I like Francis Ha. I like Greenberg. I think that's it. I think that's it with Noah Baumbach for me.
Have you seen Kicking and Screaming?
I haven't seen Kicking and Screaming.
I don't know that it works now. In the mid-90s, I was like, this is a really good movie.
Yeah.
It may only work as a time capsule now.
Okay.
But I remember really liking it. And I haven't gone back to watch Squid and the Whale, but I remember liking that as well.
Squid and the Whale's not bad.
Yeah.
The thing is with this, it's so specific of a certain type of affluent art school thing.
Yeah.
That if you're not that,
yeah.
it's really got nothing
okay.
to bring you in.
Got it.
And it's like that from minute one. So it's very like standoffish for me. And then like Dustin Hoffman's in it and I don't want to see that motherfucker for a long time.
No.
And then Sandler's good in it. Stiller's good in it. But it's very, I don't know. And like, this must have been like 1,000-page screenplay. It's exhausting. Like just listening to them talk, I'm just like, oh my God, have a visual moment.
Yeah.
Like just like slow down, please. And it takes them like 400 words to say like, go get the nurse. It's just like, will you calm down, please? So
I know I have to watch it at some point because I haven't loved his last couple movies, but like, he's a filmmaker whose movies I will always check out, and the fact that it's on Netflix and I literally have to make no effort to see it, I know I will, but I just haven't yet.
Yeah. I turned it on a Saturday night. It's not a good Saturday night movie. It probably is like a good like Sunday at 11 movie.
Okay. 11 a.m. we're talking. Got it. Okay. So I need to find babysitters is what you're saying.
Exactly,
okay. Okay.
Exactly.
All right.
Or all just never watch it.
Oh, all right.
Yeah.
A viable alternative.
Yesterday I saw Wonder, which I've been hearing good word of mouth about.
Yes.
For like a month. And it's good.
Okay.
It was interesting because I was for a while the only person in the theater, which is okay because it's been out for a while. And I get to the ticket terror at the theater that we go to mostly. And she goes, it's like five people in line in front of me and they're all seeing Star Wars. And then she looks at my ticket and she's like, not Star Wars? And I said, no, I've seen it already. And
when you bought your ticket, did you say one for not Star Wars?
Yeah, that's exactly what I told the kiosk. And then it's just like, blah, 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 blah.
So it just spits out a random.
That's how kiosks talk.
Yeah, no, I know. I've talked to them.
Yeah. So I'm the only one in the theater. And then like 12-year-old, 13-year-old girls come in later. And then they're like a few rows ahead of me. So luckily, like the way that stadium seating is now with the recliners and stuff, you're kind of isolated, except from the people in your row. But I overheard this before the movie and it was really funny. They go, I think we're the only ones in the theater. And then one girl goes to the other girl, no, there's a guy back there. And then the other girl stands up, looks at me and just goes, ugh, and then sits down. And I'm just here to see the movie.
I don't need your shit, girls.
So, Wonder is... I was nervous about it because it's like, okay, don't be mean to the kid. Like, and I wasn't going to be mean to the kid. So, like, will I get anything out of this?
Right.
And I think if you have kids, it's a great movie to show them, to teach them about being the right way to around kids who are different or have disadvantages. The movie itself won me over about 20 minutes in, because it starts out where it's about Jacob Tremblay's character, but then there's a title card with like his sister's name, and then they show like stuff from her perspective, and then they show like his best friend, and then it's like from his perspective, and then they show like the sister's best friend and it's from her perspective, and I'm just like, oh, this is like a little Pulp Fiction thing. Like, and it was neat because like some of the, it wasn't just hitting the lessons that you were expecting it to hit. It was like, there's stuff like, did you see A Monster Calls from last year?
Nope.
There's stuff in that movie that they say where I'm just like, I can't believe they said that in a movie, because it's so like the stuff that you keep to yourself, but would never say out loud.
Got it.
And Wonder has some of that stuff in it. So I really liked it. I think people should see it if you haven't seen it yet.
Somebody who saw it and read the book had told me that that's how it was structured, because the book is structured that way apparently as well.
But. Yeah. Yeah. So
does Owen Wilson say like, wow?
Actually, he doesn't really do that. No. He's pretty good in this.
All right.
But yeah, I think it's the same director as Perks of Being a Wallflower. And I like this guy's stuff so far.
Sure.
I did a double feature a week ago of Just Getting Started and Jumanji, Welcome to the Jungle.
God damn. Now that is not out yet. So you have an early exclusive.
Amazon Prime members could purchase tickets early and see it on last Friday.
Yeah.
So I saw it because exclusive. Hello. Right. Who's got the exclusive? If this movie's got the exclusive. Jumanji.
Yeah.
What up? So I was really taken aback by how much I liked it.
That's so surprising.
It was
and
really
encouraging.
Fun. It was really fun. It reminded me, it's not as good as Galaxy Quest. It's probably better than Goosebumps, but it's got that fun spirit to it.
Okay.
It's got like a...
Because I'm almost not on board for 3/4 of that cast.
And you know what the funny thing is? They all are like deferential of each other. Nobody's trying to like peacock.
Okay.
It's neat. Like, I used to like Kevin Hart when he was just doing like the Grudge Match supporting roles. Where he's like the fifth guy in it.
Right.
Even like Jack Black is just like, he's playing a teenage girl in it. In Jack Black's body. And he's really funny as a teenage girl. And then The Rock isn't being like franchise taker over
guy.
And he's just like, you know, some seasoning. He's not the meat. He's not the whole stew. But I mentioned it in an article that we wrote that will probably go out this week because I didn't get a chance to do my 20 years later of Tomorrow Never Dies because I watched 10 minutes of it and that movie's super fucking depressing in 2017.
Oh, I couldn't really? Get through it. Yeah. I haven't watched it in a couple of years.
Carver Media Group is it's annoying now. So I mentioned Karen Gillan in that great performance of 2017 article. And she's so freaking good in this movie.
I'm excited.
She is really, really funny. And she gets a lot of like standout moments, and I was a fan of hers before, but I mean like Ruby Roundhouse for life. Hello. Like she is so awesome in this movie. So if for no other reason, if you have already seen The Last Jedi enough times for you to finally convince yourself that you like it, like go see Jumanji Welcome to the Jungle and you will be probably pleasantly surprised.
Yeah. I'm a Karen Gillan fan from Doctor Who days. I have an Amy Pond action figure. Not just because she's a redhead, but also because she was great on that show.
How many seasons was she on?
She was on two, basically. Like I don't watch them. Five and six. They're my two favorite seasons. Yeah. But again, everybody is of a different mind. There are people who will say, those were the worst 2 years.
Who is the doctor?
Matt Smith.
He's the person I'm jealous of because he is courting Lily James right now.
And he acted opposite Karen Gillan for two seasons of a show.
Good thing he looks like a foot. Anyways. And then before that, I saw Just Getting Started, the new Ron Shelton movie, which you would never... Like, I was talking to Dr. David Banner on Twitter.
Yeah.
And he said, it bums me out that movie is getting such a bad rap because I am a fan of Ron Shelton. I like even Play It to the Bone. And I would said,
okay,
dude. So I told him, you wouldn't even know this is Ron Shelton. Okay. Like it is like so nondescript of his, except for kind of like the chauvinistic, like kind of jockeying for a woman type of thing. Like, but the dialogue is just like, it's fucked up. Like this movie is fucking weird. Like it reminds me of like a comedy that would be at the Dollar Theater in 3 weeks in 1989.
Yeah,
like it's strange. So I'll give you some examples.
All right,
so
I'm into it.
There's a high speed chase at the end because there's a mob hitman who is after Morgan Freeman.
When I saw one trailer for this one time.
Yeah,
like maybe before Murder on the Orient Express.
That sounds right.
And it takes a turn. The trailer is like these two dudes at a retirement community, and then all of a sudden there's a whole witness relocation. And I was like, oh no, this movie's gonna end with like people with guns, like late 80s style.
Yeah, exactly.
And I was not on board for that.
Okay, so we'll start there. Like they're in a high speed chase. Rene Russo, spoilers for Just Getting Started. They're in a high speed chase. And when I say high speed, it's like 40 miles an hour in the middle of the desert. And Rene Russo has been kidnapped. Tommy Lee Jones and Morgan Freeman team up.
Oh, to go good. Get her a back. Movie where a woman needs to be saved.
Yeah. Yeah. And they drive past, a roadside attraction with brontosauruses. And I think it's the same one from The Wizard, maybe. You know what I'm talking about? Like where the kid hides in the brontosaurus?
Oh, yeah. I think please. It's the Wizard, one. Jenny Lewis, redhead.
Yeah.
Continue.
I think it's that one. So it's like, so there's an actual line where Morgan Freeman is just like, and keep in mind, this is a high-speed chase. They're going after a woman that they both presumably are very attracted to.
It's really Rene Russo. Who could blame them?
And they're just like,
kind of a redhead.
So he sees it and he just goes, two old dinosaurs, just like us.
Wow.
And then he goes, this is thrilling. And I'm just like, what? And then there's like all this stuff. Like half of the movie is just them challenging each other to golf and poker and weightlifting. And everybody in the Villa Capri, which is this retirement village, stops everything that they're doing to watch them. There's a chorus of women who want to fuck Tommy Lee Jones, and they're all like, ooh, there's new food on the buffet. And then they just show Tommy Lee Jones, and he's like waddling and shitting his pants, and it's like, what is this? And it hurt me a lot.
I used to pride myself on my ability to retain titles and premises of movies that I've never seen, that I will never see, but I was able to catalog stuff in my head. In the last few years, there has been this glut of like old people comedies, and I can no longer keep them straight.
Yeah.
And this movie is being filed like in a week, I will not remember what that movie is called, mm-hmm. but I'll know that it's one of these old people comedies, much like Last Vegas the Zach Braff one that I will never remember the name of.
Bucket List.
The one that's coming out about dads. What's that one? It comes out at like Christmas.
Father Figures.
Is that an old man comedy?
No, that's like Ed Helms and Owen Wilson, and that should have come out in like 2007.
Good Lord. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. But wait, isn't it about their dads?
Yeah.
Who are their dads?
It could be Christopher Walken, J.K. Simmons, Ving Rhames.
Yeah. This is an old man comedy.
Yeah. Bradshaw.
Yeah. No, it's an old man. This is all.
Terry Bradshaw win you over?
Sure. This is an old. I loved him in Failure to Launch.
Who didn't?
This is an old man comedy, and I'm grouping it in with all of these other goddamn movies that I'm never going to see.
I have a weird ironic affection, kind of like I do with bad Christmas movies, for the old Morgan Freeman Fuck It box set. So, like.
Which is growing larger every year.
It's huge. I have a Warner's like history of film box set. There's fewer movies in that than in the Morgan Freeman Says Fuck It box set. I think the last movie he cared about was maybe Million Dollar Baby.
He won an Oscar for that, right?
Yeah, I think after that was his just like, all right.
Time to cash in.
Yeah. So I don't know.
Car accidents with young ladies don't pay for themselves.
No, they don't. So, I mean, like, I get a certain amount of enjoyment out of watching something this terrible. And that's why I went to see it. I'd like to be the person who goes, I don't see things ironically. I fucking definitely saw it just getting started ironically.
Well, you get a certain amount of enjoyment out of these movies. So that's not ironic enjoyment,
right? And then the theater had, like, maybe 10 people when I saw it.
Baffling to me.
A couple... an older couple were getting up and leaving the theater, and a woman said something so fascinating to me, and it made everything about the movie better. And she goes, "You see, movies like that are just what I like." And I'm like, she is just getting started.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Listen, I've had that experience.
Yeah.
I've had the experience where I sat down to watch something, and I was like, man, that's exactly what I was in the mood for.
Yeah.
So I get it. Miss Congeniality, I think I liked that's way more than I should because the week I saw it, when I sat down to watch, I was like, that's exactly what I was in the mood for, and I didn't know it.
Yeah. It's like me with Birth of a Dragon.
Perhaps. Like, still, is it still in the, I don't want to give anything away, but
it's not in the top
10. Oh, anymore. Son of a bitch.
It's in my runners up.
Okay.
So
did it outlast Wish Upon in the top 10?
No.
Wish Upon got bounced after Birth of a Dragon.
Yeah, Birth of a Dragon would be like number like 14 or 15 right now, and Wish Upon is like a cool 12.
I do not even have a draft of my top 10.
Do you know what the weird thing about my top 10 is? There's no movie that I'm like super duper passionate about, because the stuff that I thought that was going to be number one for a while, I had like two jockeying back and forth to number one. And I saw both of them a second time, and I liked both of them a lot less the second time.
Interesting.
Not like so much that like they're not going to be on my list, but like... And then there's a lot of movies like in like 10 through 8 where I'm like, oh,
that's only three spots.
I'm like, they could fall off the list if I see, you know, Shape of Water and I love it. Or if I see like so-and-so. And I'm so like precious about those right now. I'm like hoping that something in the middle really sucks. Like when I watch it again.
Got it.
Where I'm just like, man, I hope this fucking movie just like, I hate it now. I hope I hate it so I can sneak this one in. And it's like such a weird thing. So this might be the first year of me doing top 10 lists at F this movie where I don't absolutely adore my number one pick.
Yeah, I might be in the same boat.
Yeah.
I don't know. So I don't know. Anything else?
And then we could finish up with the 12 Dates of Christmas.
Let's do it.
Did you see anything that you wanted to talk about before we get into 12 Dates?
Sure, yeah, before we 12 Dates it up.
Yeah.
I finally caught up with War for the Planet of the Apes,
yes.
Which I had not seen. I'm trying to catch up on a bunch of 2017 movies that escaped me. Mm-hmm. I liked it, didn't love it. Mm-hmm. And I'm a big fan of Dawn of the Planet of the Apes.
Yeah.
I really thought that was a terrific movie because I feel like that balanced a lot of the sort of interesting, for lack of a better word, character work and thematic work while also being like a pretty kick-ass exciting movie. Mm-hmm. And I don't think War does that. Like, it's got the interesting thematic stuff and some of the character stuff, but it's not – that entertaining.
Yeah, I could see that.
The effects are incredible. Andy Serkis continues to be pretty amazing in that role. It's way better than his work as Snoke.
Yeah. Could anybody make Snoke work?
No. So the score was great. I remember you guys calling out the score when you and Rob did a thing about it.
Yeah.
And the score was really cool. Again, I think it's really interesting that this trilogy of movies exists. For me, I liked it better than Dawn and less than... No, kidding.
Better than Rise.
Better than Rise, less than Dawn.
Okay. We'll rank it with the Pixar movies now.
But I'm fascinated. I think it's really cool that this series of movies exists that are like pretty dark, pretty somber, pretty thoughtful at a time when our blockbusters are getting louder and dumber and shittier in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
These really kind of buck that trend to be something very different. It's not entirely successful for me, but I'm glad that it exists.
Yeah, it's one of those movies that I really liked when I saw it, and now I know I'm never going to watch it again. And
yeah,
it's
I can't see myself watching it again.
Yeah, and it just kind of exists fleetingly in my memory.
Right.
And
that's it's like, it. Boy, that Matt Reeves, he's interesting. Anyway, yeah. He's doing interesting stuff. I don't think he's made a bad movie yet, but also, anyway.
Yeah.
I saw The House. Not the worst movie I saw this year.
It's up there for me.
Here's the difference.
Yeah.
You went to see it in a theater. An empty theater.
I guess in a concert hall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where I could absolutely see the jokes dying on their way from the screen to you.
Yeah.
I watched it on television.
Yeah.
In my home.
Yeah.
Where I did not give a shit. I was not invested. The jokes didn't have to come so far. And I don't remember really laughing, but I also, it was like 80 minutes and almost entirely people that I like. Mm-hmm. Maybe not like, as you said, Rob Hubel. I like Rob Hubel, but like he's not funny in this movie. But no. Everybody that shows up, you're like, oh, cool, there's so-and-so. And so I was excited to see a lot of people from the comedy world show up, even if the movie didn't really make me laugh.
I don't dislike Rob Hubel. It's just that he's in every bad comedy.
Correct. He's also in Baywatch.
Yeah.
This was a better movie than Baywatch.
Yeah. Comedies are really bothering me like the past 10 years because everybody in it is better than the material
Correct.
That they're playing.
Yes.
And they'll go out of their way to make it seem like off camera that they're better than these things. But I would think like, then why aren't you better than them on camera ever?
Right. Right.
And I also am cursed in that if I'm watching something like The House, I can see the improv. Like, and you can see the improv, but I can like really, really see the improv.
Sure.
Just because I'm just like, oh, this is a group scene where they don't know what to do, so they're hugging.
Right,
like,
right.
This is what, that happens all the time.
Right.
And there's literally that scene in this movie.
Right.
So, I don't know, man.
No, it's not great.
No.
Again, everyone.
And it's Jason Mantzoukas?
Mantzoukas,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I just don't like his delivery. Like, every sentence is just like, and this is a poker table. And this
is
where we have the bathrooms.
That's a pretty
it's
good
It's just like every
Mantzoukas,
sentence is
yeah.
his presentational.
Okay.
I'm just like, fucking stop it, please.
He makes me laugh. Not necessarily in this movie,
he makes
but
me
just
laugh sometimes too, but not
yeah.
in this movie.
No, well, nobody really made me laugh in this movie, but whatever.
Yeah.
I'm not going to talk about it for very long, but last night I was eating pizza and wanted something like mindless that I had seen. So I went 21 Jump Street,
okay.
which I know you don't love, but like,
I like the first one.
Yeah.
The second one I don't like that much.
I haven't rewatched the second one since the theater, but man, speaking of like, why aren't comedies better? That first one is really good and really fun and like says something and is, I think, the movie that made Channing Tatum the star that he has become, because it was like he so surprised people with how funny and sweet he is in that movie.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a big fan of that movie.
I want to go back and watch it because it's happy Brie Larson, and I don't feel like she's been happy in a couple years.
No, not so much. Well, she's going to play a superhero, so, you know.
Oh, yeah.
That's good.
Is that next year or the year after?
I think it's the year after. Yeah. She may show up in that Avengers movie because I think you and I are going to show up in that Avengers movie.
So you've seen the preview for that.
Yeah.
I don't like the stinger at the end where they show the Guardians of the Galaxy
right.
when Thor says it, because for whatever reason, I feel like they show the Guardians, but it's like they're in a VR.
Right.
Like, they don't look real.
Right.
Like, Chris Pratt looks like a like a wax figure.
I don't like it either, but I will say that when my 9-year-old son was with me when we saw it before Star Wars, he got very excited by that beat. So maybe it's for him, the 9-year-old who's like, oh, the Guardians of the Galaxy are in it too.
I like my Guardians so much that I don't want them to get involved in this Michigas.
Again, we shall wait and see. Yeah. My gut tells me too big, but I could be wrong.
Before we get into the 12 dates of Christmas, though, I need to give you your first night of Hanukkah present.
Oh, yes. Thank you.
So your first night of Hanukkah present. Hold on one second.
We're a few nights past the first night of Hanukkah, but happy Hanukkah
Is to you and all of our listeners. Disney Princess joke book with over 100 jokes.
Thank you.
So I am going to give this to you. And then if you
Are these jokes about the Disney princesses or told from the...
From their point of view.
From their point of view.
So if maybe, I don't know, maybe throughout the show if you want to...
Yeah.
Give us a joke or
Thank
two.
You for this.
Yeah.
Let's go ahead and start. How did Tiana of the Princess and the Frog?
Sure.
How did Tiana fix the smashed tomato?
Ketchup.
I'm sorry. She used tomato paste.
Tiana. Oh, my God. Oh, that Tiana.
I
didn't
can't...
gross much money, did you, Tiana?
What? This is about Gus and Jack from Cinderella, the two mice.
Okay.
What does Jack like to eat for dessert?
Matzo balls.
I'm sorry, no. I was looking for mice cream. Mice cream.
Is that like pork?
I'm going to put this book away now. We'll come back to it.
Okay.
We will come back to it. Thank you for the gift. It was
Happy
very
first
thoughtful.
Night of Hanukkah.
Thank you very much. Happy first night of Hanukkah to you as well.
Thank you.
A couple other things that I want to touch on quickly. I watched a movie called Psychos in Love that our own Stephanie Crawford is a big fan of, and she suggested that I watch it. It's out on Blu-ray from Vinegar Syndrome, and it's really, really fun. I think it appeals to specific sensibilities. It's about a man who loves to murder women and a woman who loves to murder men, and they meet each other, and they're like, wait, we both love to murder people? Let's be in love. And then they're in love together.
That was like a short in an anthology recently, wasn't it? Did they do one like that? Maybe an XX?
Not where it's an just XX. Like, was it in
There was one
holidays
where it's just like,
or?
Yeah, maybe holidays where it's like two serial killers and then like they
But
don't
it's
know
like a twist and it's what's her name? The great Lorenza
Izzo.
Izzo, yes. Yeah. It was like one of the better segments in that movie that's not that great. It's super fun, and I was laughing really hard at it, so if you're looking for something like that, I recommend it. I saw Blade of the Immortal, the 100th film from Takashi Miike. If you're a fan of, like, 13 Assassins, you'll probably enjoy Blade of the Immortal. Lots of sword fighting, lots of violence. Not a great movie, I don't think, but I certainly was entertained. A couple other movies that you've already talked about, like Florida Project and stuff like that.
What do you think of it?
I liked it. Mm-hmm. I liked it. It depressed me. I thought it was crushingly sad, and so much of it I was like, this is, if Willem Dafoe wasn't in this movie, I would think it was a documentary.
Yeah. Is it wrong that I have a crush on Haley a lot?
Is she the mom?
Yeah.
No, it's not wrong.
Okay. I know, like, bad parent.
I know where you're coming from.
But I have a, between Fish Tank and American Honey and a Florida Project, I've noticed that I'm a big fan of like the poverty drama, which is really weird, but like I've noticed I'm a fan of the poverty drama. The realistic poverty drama. I don't need that poverty like NYU filter like Beasts of the Southern Wild. I know people like that, but I don't, and that's why I don't like the last, I won't spoil it, but I don't like the little last bit of Florida Project because I feel like that director of Beasts of Southern Wild came in and like took the movie away. Anyways, I would love to see a comedy or a buddy drama even of Haley from Florida Project with Katie Jarvis from Fish Tank.
I would see that
where
movie.
They're like roommates.
I would 100% see that movie.
And like she's just like, you're a terrible dancer, that's my problem. And she's just like, what is even your problem even? I would love to see that.
Yeah, Sean Baker is a really good director. Are you a Tangerine fan?
I haven't seen the whole thing. I've seen like half of it, but I really do like what I've seen.
Yeah. I rewatched the other night. I was like, it was late. I had a bunch of work to do. I wanted to put something on. It's winter now. Mm-hmm. I had to rewatch The Hateful Eight, which is the first time I've rewatched it since the theater.
Yeah.
It was even better than I remember it being.
Yeah.
I had seen it twice in theaters. And, you know, the length kind of kept me off of revisiting it, and it's super talky, and so you're just not always in the mood for it. But my goodness, did it play, and I was watching it, and I know it's, you know, one of Tarantino's more polarizing movies, because now everything is polarizing, even Star Wars. But I was watching it just not understanding how... I get not liking it, but to suggest that it's a bad movie, I put something on Twitter, like, how do people watch this and not see it as sort of an American classic, just in terms of what he is saying in that movie, what that movie is about. It just blows me away.
He,
I think it's so good.
Pulse on something that was about to brew.
He's so much smarter than he gets credit for being, in terms of like what's going on beneath the... People don't think that his movies have subtext. They seem to think that it's just violence and foul language and cool shit and references, and there is a lot of that stuff, but there is so much going on under the surface in movies like Inglourious Basterds and The Hateful Eight, that I hope someday it gets the appreciation that I think it deserves.
Yeah. I hope they come out with another release of it, though, because I've seen it on Showtime a few times, and then I have a digital copy of it, and it's great for the theater, the way that they format it, but like for a TV, like even a TV that's like 40,
it's too 46, narrow, you're saying? It's like it's pretty
too
narrow
and wide. Yeah. And it's just like, I get it, but like at the same time, it's kind of like, ugh, I don't know. It's like one's for the theater and one's for my television.
Well, but how could they format it a different way? Because you would start to lose information from the sides.
I've turned into the customer at Blockbuster.
Oh no, I don't want these black bars.
I didn't pay for my big TV to see some black bars.
You would literally see like 1/6 of the screen if they were to full frame that shit.
Just pan and scan it.
Oh, yikes.
Like Sony in the 90s. Where it looked like a television camera was...
Yikes. I just heard... Maybe it was on Movie Crypt where Joe Lynch was talking about watching stuff pan and scan, and like he grew up watching Rambo pan and scan, and he said he thought it was a camera move, and then he watched it, and he was like, oh, wait, it's not supposed to be that way. The first time I watched Ghostbusters on cable, not the first time, but one of the times, I was like, wait, what's going on? Why does this look so weird? And then I figured out what was happening.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the most important movie to talk about.
Sure.
Is a little something called 12 Dates of Christmas.
For sure.
Because it was over a month ago, probably, where you emailed me and said, there's a Christmas movie with Amy Smart and Zach Morris, and I don't know who's like the winner in that relationship. Yeah. Something to that effect.
Yeah.
And I said, I want to watch it. And you said, how about we both watch it and we talk about it on our holiday episode?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I did just watch it the other day. Would you care to weigh in on 12 Dates of Christmas?
Same premise as Groundhog Day and Happy Death Day.
Sure is.
Not as good as Groundhog Day. Better than Happy Death Day.
I feel like, by the way, I feel like we could do an entire podcast on 12 Dates of Christmas.
I think we easily could.
I have too much to say about this movie.
I have a couple things. One is, this is just like a real kind of hit and run joke, but the there's a line that her neighbor says to her, and I don't have to do this very often. I had paused the movie and think, does that check out? And the line is, reputations are just history in rumor form. And I had to think about it. I'm just like, am I too dumb for this movie? Like, is this movie like way smarter than I think that it is?
It sure is.
So, anyways.
There's some deep stuff going on.
Okay. Zach Morris is a widower. His wife died in a very specific way, which I found for like a Hallmark movie to be, or not Hallmark, it was Freeform, to be very
weird. It was super weird. It was super, like, This movie hits so many cliches. Why do they not just go cancer?
Yeah, so they say cancer or they say car accident or something like that. He says, no, she was cleaning the gutters and fell off of a ladder and died.
And he should have been there.
Yeah, and he should have been there. And like, regrets, there's one part, like, no. Yeah, there's one part where he just goes, it's not that I regret that she's dead. It's more that I regret that I wasn't there. So like, I'm thinking that there's going to be a point while they're like on these dates where he's like a time jumper too, and he's trying to save his wife, but he has to like get out of this date. Because you would think like he's living in this whole like, it could be like source code where he's trying to like stop his wife from dying by falling off of a ladder from cleaning the gutters. But no, he's like dating this woman.
It's so weird. Because really every time it comes up, I think about this woman falling off a ladder to her death.
I did too.
And it was really, really fucking up my Christmassy romance vibe.
I thought it was also weird too, like this guy Jack that Amy Smart is supposed to be.
Of course his name is Jack.
Is supposed to be pining over still and everything. So he says to her, you know, I was going to propose to you after 6 months of dating, but then your mom died. And then all you could talk about was getting married. I'm like, but you wanted to marry her. I'm like, stop.
He wanted it when she didn't want it.
Yeah. Like, no wonder why they're incompatible.
It was a fun cat and mouse game.
It's just like, your stupid mom got in the way.
One of the weird things about 12 Dates of Christmas,
yeah,
and there are a lot of weird things about this movie, even though I totally enjoyed it.
Yeah, like, I did too.
It was very watchable.
Yeah.
I will say, there's this thing that's happened in recent years, and Margot has talked about it on our show, and I do not hold her accountable for this because she was one of the first people I ever heard say that she loves like the Hallmark Lifetime freeform Christmas movies.
Yeah.
But there's a weird fetishization that has happened around these movies now where like, are people enjoying them ironically? Are they? I don't know, but people are obsessing over them now, and there's four different channels showing them around the clock. As I was watching 12 Dates of Christmas, which came out in like 2012?
Yeah, 2011.
2011. Everything about the aesthetic and the music and like the covers of 12 Days of Christmas, everything about it, I was like, these are not for me. You know, like I can tolerate a lot of different stuff, but I was like, I'm not into this.
Yeah.
It's Groundhog Day, and Amy Smart really has to what? Like, what is it that she's trying to fix? What does she need to do in order for the day to end? Because Happy Death Day, it's like, solve your murder.
Yeah.
Groundhog Day, it's become a decent human being.
Yeah.
She's not really that flawed from the jump.
She needs to be to let go and to become less structured and just go with it.
But, like, she's not that, I don't know. And there's entire days where she just doesn't even show up for the date. She's just, like, learning how to bake.
Yeah. And I'm cool with that.
I guess.
She, like, gets her hair
But she only
brown.
Has 12 of them, right?
No, I think she could have had them everlasting if she wanted.
Oh, wait a second.
But, no, like.
Had she just.
She has a lot of.
Wished for it?
Look, Patrick, You've been married for a long time. Let me explain something to you.
All right.
On their blind date, while she's on the phone and stuff like that, I've been on that date before.
Okay.
That person has issues that they're not aware of yet. And it's difficult to get through to people like that. And I think that's kind of what... She has a plan, see? She's an A personality.
All right.
She needs to be relaxed.
By drinking the lager that she doesn't want.
Even, or just taking a sip. It's already paid for.
I mean, he says,
happy
right?
to pay for the lager. Live a little.
I want to talk about Zach Morris for a second.
Yeah.
Because I am a big Mark Paul Gosselaar fan.
Yeah.
I watched a lot of Saved by the Bell as a kid.
I watched a lot of NYPD Blue.
Okay. Never saw it. Big Mark Paul Gosselaar
fan. Happy to loan you the DVDs.
Didn't watch any of his failed NBC shows.
Yeah.
Didn't watch that.
Franklin and Bash.
I watched every Franklin and Bash. Don't you worry.
Who are you more, a Franklin or a Bash?
Who's who?
I don't know.
I don't either. I know it was Peter Bash because I remember Malcolm McDowell constantly saying, Peter Bash. I did watch every episode.
Can I tell the Malcolm McDowell little tidbit from Flashback Weekend.
100%. So he never said Peter Bash.
Malcolm McDowell was at Malcolm McDowell had like a ton of DVDs of shows and movies he was in at his table at Flashback Weekend. And I said to Patrick, could I go up there and not get his autograph and just say how much are the Franklin Bash DVDs? And I didn't do it. I should have done it.
Yeah.
Anyways.
I'm a big fan of his. Yeah. And I find him to be an intrinsically charming actor.
Yeah.
I think that's what made him popular on Saved by the Bell. I think that is what has carried his career. I think he's a charming presence on screen.
Yeah.
In this movie, there's a fine line between, like, I don't know.
He's
like
a little cloying.
It's not that it's cloying. It's like, it's like he's, I don't know, like he could be a serial killer. I don't know. There's something like,
I didn't get that at all.
Oh, I was watching it a different way. I don't know. He's like, he's overly sensitive. He gets rejected very easily. Now I know, listen, his wife did fall off a ladder and die recently. So he still smarts every time he sees a ladder. Amy smarts. But the pushing the logger on her, I thought was weird. There's times where I was just like, you're coming on, you're a little too intense. Like he needs to lighten up. It's constantly about her lightening up. I feel like he needed to lighten up. And the ways that they show that he's the, by the way, no one in this fucking movie is flawed. Like, not only is he not flawed, he's perfect. I mean, he's coaching the hockey team for the foster,
the kids who don't have homes.
Right. And like,
can we talk about the logistics of this date? Like, okay. They go to the date to meet, he's the godson of her stepmom.
Right.
And they're going to end up at the party anyways.
Right.
You're only asking for trouble by having them meet before the party.
Yes. Just because introduce like them at the party.
Yes, because it's like 80-20 that they don't get along and they don't want to see each other or hang out with each other, but then they got to go to the same place at the end of the night?
Yes. It's very, very strange. It's so weird when she runs out on their date the first time and then is like, I'll see you at my dad's. Like, well, that's bizarre.
Yeah.
I don't understand, like, the guy who's making the thing with the lights.
I don't get that either.
Who's dating the girl that I think she just meets in the course of reliving this, right? But at one point, they're all hanging out together.
Yeah. And why is emo Peter Parker in the bar?
I don't know. Just so that eventually...
I thought they were going to end up together. I thought that was going to be one of those things where it's just like, oh, it was you the whole time.
I did not think they were going to end up together, but at one point, she thinks that he knows what's going on.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay, maybe he's also reliving every day.
Oh, yeah, they jettison that right away.
I mean, nothing happens. Yeah. She throws him up against a wall, and then we move on. I thought it was like the day will move on when she learns to treat that guy nicely.
Yeah.
Not date him, but like treat him like a human being.
Yeah.
Instead, she sets him up with her friend, and everything works out.
I also like that...
we are talking so much about this
movie. I also like...
We still have a whole movie to talk about.
I also like that the gentleman who has the holiday lights, who did it 1 year for his girlfriend, she liked it, and then just keeps milking that teat.
Right. But it's a disaster every year? Like, he hasn't figured out how to do it?
Yeah, but then... Anyways. So, but then she, like, just... Amy Smart says to the woman, she goes, do you want to just come over to my place and eat junk food and jump on our couches like we're 11 years old? And then, like, the parents walk in on her, and I'm like, it would be way less embarrassing if they were just, like, doing something adult.
Right.
Like, if they didn't act like they were 10 years old. It was weird.
This movie is bananas, but
it's
again,
it's really good. You should watch it.
It goes by. It's on Netflix. Yeah. On Netflix. Yeah. It goes by on the charm of the two actors who I would gladly watch in a romantic comedy together.
Yeah. When they go on the ice rink and she's good at ice skating, did you see that coming? I didn't see that coming. That was a real surprise.
It was. Yeah. Are we supposed to think that she had learned how to ice skate? The way that, like,
she knew from before.
From
her past lives.
From reliving the day.
I don't think so.
Oh, she
just knew how to ice skate.
See, that's what I was confused about. I thought it was Bill Murray learning how to make the sculpture.
Or a smart badarp.
So I was riding the 12 Dates of Christmas High.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, I'm going to also watch Just Friends, Christmas movie, Amy Smart.
I thought you were going to say, I went outside and ate a handful of snow. Just Friends is good.
It's a crazy movie.
It's
like,
fun.
It is, and it's one of those sort of out colds where it's like, oh, this is way funnier than it should be.
Yeah,
but I did notice there's a weird thing going on in that movie, and I genuinely enjoy that movie a great deal.
Yeah.
Two things. One, I was watching it, and Erica and I were talking about Amy Smart, and we're like, hey, how come she never became more of a thing? Every time she shows up in something, I'm like, Amy Smart, you're pleasant. I know she's in Mirrors. Yeah. I haven't seen Mirrors yet. I'll be honest, everyone.
I thought that was Paula Patton.
They both are. But I don't know, man, because I think I was watching it the same day of like that Mira Sorvino story, and I don't want to turn another podcast into talking about the sexual harassment stuff, but like every time now there's an actress where I'm like, hey, how come that didn't – you got to wonder. Like, was there someone – standing in the way? It may not have been Harvey Weinstein, but was there someone standing in the way?
She did do a lot of those, like, didn't she do some dimension stuff, like Outside Providence? And
even if it wasn't Harvey Weinstein, was someone stopping Amy Smart? Because look at Ryan Reynolds, who just failed in movie after movie and still got leads and is still, outside of Deadpool, like, has really never been in a hit.
Yeah.
Even after Deadpool, he's making The Hitman's Bodyguard, right? And Life and these other fucking movies. So people want to see him as Deadpool and that's it.
Yeah.
And yet he gets chance after chance and Amy Smart doesn't, right? Anyway, the other thing that I noticed about Just Friends, which is a movie that I like, and Anna Faris is hilarious.
Oh my God.
Few actors are better at playing the worst people than Anna Faris. Yeah. Between that and May and Observe and Report, she has the market cornered on just awful, awful people, and very specific kinds of awful people.
Yeah.
Just Friends doesn't date really well because she's playing a pop star that no longer exists, I don't think. But there's a weird thing where everyone in that movie, with the exception of maybe Amy Smart, has this simmering rage. People are constantly screaming at each other and hitting each other in that movie.
Yeah.
Everyone's very quick to anger.
Yeah.
It's a weird thing. I mean, it's funny, like it makes me laugh, but it's just, it keeps happening where people just lose their shit.
I think she's the Mary in Something About Mary of the movie, though.
She is,
the calm center,
right,
where everybody else is chaotic.
Yes.
So it's a classic, is what I'm saying. No, I Just Friends was one of those movies where I saw it at the Dollar Theater with zero expectation.
Yeah.
And just, like, was thoroughly entertained.
We went to see The Ice Harvest, which is a movie I really like, and then we went to see Just Friends, which was like the bonus. You know, it was like, and then I was like, oh, this movie's so much funnier than I thought it would be. And they're both Christmas movies that I revisit a lot. It was a really good double feature, is what I'm saying, everyone.
It was a really good double feature.
It was a good day at the movies. Take yourself back.
Sure.
It's Christmas Day.
Yeah.
1997. Ooh. We're going back 20 years.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
There's a movie out called Jackie Brown.
Yeah.
It's a great movie.
I saw it.
Still talking about it 20 years later. You and I just did a podcast on it. Talked about how much we love it. Okay?
Yes.
People were very nice about that episode. Very nice. They said they liked it a lot.
I'm glad they
Some did. People said they thought it was our best episode.
Wow.
Right? I think even director Timo Jahanto said it was one of our best, which I was like, holy fucking shit.
Yeah, when I hear Timo Jahanto, when I hear stuff like that, right? I'm just like, you know, you did things that are way better than what we did.
Yeah, well, right, yes. So
I'm flattered.
So yes, oh my gosh, so awesome, right?
Yeah.
Another movie came out that same day.
An American Werewolf in Paris?
No, my friend.
Mr. Magoo?
I'm sorry, still no. Less Leslie Nielsen.
Maybe it's a movie that's as good as it gets.
Here's a movie that I feel like is designed just for you. Because it stars...
The Crypt Keeper.
Your favorite actor.
Yeah.
In this is a movie that stars Kevin Costner, everyone.
Yes.
In maybe the most Kevin Costner movie ever made.
He put his stamp on this one for sure.
100%. Not only does he star in it, he directs it.
Produced.
Produced it. Sings the song over the end credits.
All of his children were
show
in
up
it.
In the movie. It is, he's working with all of the themes that he would continue to work with. So there's some Dances with Wolves in there. There's some Waterworld in there. There's some Open Range because it is a Western, essentially. So it is sort of the ultimate Kevin Costner movie. And then if you're not sold yet, do you know at the point where I thought when I rewatched this the other day, when I was like, oh, this is a movie made just for Adam Erskine. Do you know what it was?
No.
The very end of the movie.
Yeah.
We're getting the dedication.
Yeah.
To our hero.
Yes.
And who's reading that dedication? Our hero's daughter.
Mary Stuart Masterson.
Played by Bed of Roses, Mary Stuart Masterson.
I'd like to think it's the same character.
So the fact that there was a Bed of Roses connection,
yeah.
I thought, well, this is a movie made specifically for Adam Erskine.
Yeah. So when we did the Jackie Brown show, I mentioned that it was a movie made by a man who's in love. Kevin Costner may have been in love with himself when he was making The Postman.
Yeah, so the movie is The Postman,
yeah.
Everyone. That is the movie. We did not announce it. It's not even the name of this episode, per Adam's recommendation. You had to wait until 54 minutes in to this podcast to find out what we're even talking about.
Good things come to those who wait.
You heard a lot about 12 Dates of Christmas.
Yeah.
Now we're talking about The Postman. Mm-hmm. Because here's the thing.
Just like Amazon Prime, we delivered.
This is a movie that is celebrating its 20th anniversary.
Sure as fuck is.
It is a notorious
bomb.
A giant failure.
$80 million budget, $17 million gross worldwide.
Yes. It lost a crazy amount of money.
Yeah.
Kevin Costner continues to get chances in work. Amy Smart does not. So...
that was a cheap shot.
Whatever. I'm not blaming Kevin Costner. Okay. I'm blaming a system that values one gender over another.
Okay.
That's fair, right?
Yes, that is happening.
Okay. I'm not blaming Costner.
I'm just saying.
It's one of these movies that gets thrown around like Howard the Duck and like Ishtar, where it's shorthand for one of the worst movies ever made, right? And I've always felt that no, it isn't. It's not good, but it's not one of the worst movies ever made. I don't think.
You texted me a couple times because you knew this was the first time I've ever seen it.
Correct.
I purposely put it off because I couldn't see my boy struggle. I've seen him struggle elsewhere, but this was supposed to be the complete nadir of him struggling.
Yeah.
And it's not just like, you know, hey, I defend Kevin Costner. Like, I will have conversations with people who are anti-Costner and try to convince them of their short-sightedness,
right,
in my opinion. So, like, I really defend Kevin Costner. The Postman is interesting in the sense that I could name 20 movies in 2017 that I saw that I think are worse than The Postman. The Postman is so much better made than a bad movie in 2017 is. Like,
yeah,
there's a lot of scope to it.
Yes.
Like, stuff that like a bad movie in 2017 wouldn't have. I don't think there's anything in the movie that's necessarily good.
Correct.
But I don't think it's all the worst.
Except for some of the photography.
Yeah.
Some of the
photography. There's some bad composition stuff happening.
And a lot
CGI
of
CGI mixing.
And weird decisions to slow things down in post.
Yeah.
So it creates a stroby effect that is distracting and bad looking. And also, this movie doesn't need that much slow motion because it's 3 fucking hours long. Yeah. And let's move it along.
Let's be fair. It's 2 hours and 57 minutes.
Fair enough.
58.
I don't know. I almost don't know where to start talking about The Postman, because I will be honest. So I wanted to do this show because I think it's a movie that's worth talking about. I think it's one thing to just dismiss it. I think it's another to actually sit down, watch it, have a conversation about it. I know you're a Kevin Costner fan, and I was like, I'll bet we could have an interesting conversation about The Postman.
Yeah.
This was one of the first, when I bought my DVD player in 1998, this was one of the first DVDs I bought, blind buy. I was going to check out. Nope.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm checking out The Postman. I watched it, didn't love it, thought it was like, okay, interesting. I see where that doesn't totally work. I think I watched it one other time and then this time. So this is probably my third time, which is still 9 hours of my life that's been given over to The Postman.
You didn't have to be so nice.
It was, watching it on this viewing, it felt very, very long because I couldn't remember a time in my life when I wasn't watching The Postman. by about hour two, I was like, I didn't exist before this, right? Yeah. I've only ever been watching The Postman.
Yeah.
It was in a lot of ways worse than I remember.
it doesn't age well. I mean, I didn't see it when it was originally out, but there's a lot of stuff in it that you're just like, ooh, that's not good anymore. Like, from just the filmmaking to, it's just so outdated with some of the style.
Yes. I think what sinks it for me, besides it being shapeless, and we should mention that it's based on a book.
Yeah, which I've bought but not have read.
Oh, nice. I might be interested in reading that. I wonder if it works in a book. I don't know. It has this science fiction concept at its center.
There's a lot more science fiction in the book from what I read. There's like stuff involving like robots or clones.
Oh,
or things
really?
Like he jettisoned a lot of the more sci-fi elements
just
to
make it
a
Western,
post-apocalyptic Western,
which is his bag, obviously. There's this idea that, like, we're in this post-apocalyptic wasteland. The thing that's going to connect us, that's going to bring us back together, is the postal service. I mean, not exactly, but it's sort of standing in for a way to bridge all of us back together.
The author of the book, who I don't think wrote the screenplay.
He did not. Yeah. The screenplay was written by Eric Roth and Academy Award winner Brian Helgeland,
who
won the Oscar this year.
Yeah.
1997, I'm saying. He wrote this and L.A. Confidential in 97.
And Eric Roth, I think, wrote Forrest Gump.
I believe you're right.
Yeah.
I'm going to check on that as you're talking.
While you're checking, second night of Hanukkah, everybody. Patrick's got a new present.
He wrote The Insider. He wrote Munich. He wrote Benjamin Button and Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close.
Oh, a lot of good ones.
Yeah. I mean, The Horse Whisperer, Ali, your favorite.
Fuck Ali.
Yeah, he wrote some real garbage, but he also wrote The Insider.
Oh, great movie.
Yeah.
Okay. I know that you didn't have time to get out to see Ferdinand this weekend.
I did not.
So I got you a human form, John Cena's action figure.
Wow, thank you.
We will be posting pictures of these.
Yes, 100%. This is exciting.
Yeah. So if you go see Cock Blockers next year,
is that
a
movie?
Have you seen the preview for that?
No.
It looks funny, actually. Right. It's John Cena, Leslie Mann, and Ike Barinholtz as parents whose children are going to prom, and they find out that they have a sex pact, and they go out on the road to stop them from having sex.
John Cena has consistently been funny in the movies where he's asked to be funny.
Yeah, he is.
So I'm on board for John Cena comedian.
Yeah, yeah.
So the postman. So there's this idea at the center that's like sort of optimistic, I guess.
Yeah, what the author was saying is that the postman is a story about how when we lose normality, we will come to miss something as simple as the people who deliver us our mail.
Okay,
like it's that, like that will seem like a miracle, something that is so taking for granted.
I just feel like Kevin Costner takes that to such a literal degree in this movie, where the postal service really is deified, and he himself becomes a Christ figure, and he is, as he often is, a Christ figure.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong, if he started his own religion, I would be open-minded about it.
But here's the weird thing about Kevin Costner. I'm so fascinated by him, especially in movies like this and Waterworld.
Yeah.
Because here's a guy who's making such a vanity project. He's directing, producing, starring, singing the song, 3 hours long. This is his first credited directorial effort after winning the Oscar for Dances with Wolves. Yeah. I know he did a lot of uncredited work on Waterworld because I think Kevin Reynolds left.
Yeah, almost every movie he did with Kevin Reynolds is like co-directed by Costner in a way. Yeah.
So there's a lot riding on this. You know, this is his Live by Night, if you will, which is an insanely terrible movie.
Entertaining.
Oh, I disagree. Okay. Anyway, I just watched it recently. That's why I bring it up.
Yeah.
Lot riding on this. And he's just such a fascinating guy because here you're talking about this big vanity project. He's a big movie star. And yet he seems to actively be working against that sort of vanity where, like,
in a way,
in every one of these movies, he's kind of a piece of shit. Do you know what I mean? Like, particularly in The Postman and Waterworld, he's essentially a coward and a piece of shit.
Yes, but he's also, like, the prettiest person in the movie.
Sure.
Like, at least in The Postman. He's very coiffed and, like,
yes,
together, and he looks jazzy with his turtleneck and stuff like that.
But I'm just fascinated by him as this not just reluctant hero, but
that's
like
what I love about him so much.
Miserable hero. Like, it's fascinating,
yeah,
that the tension between
yeah
Kevin Costner, movie star, and what the stuff that he chooses to pursue. Unfortunately, everything around this movie
yeah
is Kevin Costner, movie star. That's the movie that's being made. Mm-hmm. But then at the center is this character who's, like, almost not a character. I mean, I don't know anything about this guy
he's
except
very
the fact
weird
that
and inconsistent.
He's not anything. Yeah. Yeah. It's just, and from scene to scene, it's like, does he want to do this? Does he's he not like want to do this?
Yeah, he's like a big goof.
Yes.
During lots of this movie.
Right.
It's just like this.
And then
movie.
He's in a romance, and then he's out of a romance, and then he's fathering a child, and then he's in a cabin for there's a whole period. The structure of this movie is bananas.
He almost seems like he's doing, like, Shakespeare ironically. It's like right. Weird. I don't know. All right. Can I talk about Kevin Costner? Like, one of the reasons why I like him so
yes.
much. Why he's my favorite actor. There's a lot of reasons why he's my favorite actor. Some of the stuff that you touched on is part of it. One thing I really respond to, and I know this isn't an original thought, it's something I've thought about because people have asked me, why is he my favorite actor? He's got this grumpy nobility to him. Like, almost half
I don't
of
see
his
the nobility. That's okay. Sometimes I do. Sometimes I do.
Almost half of his movies could be called This Isn't Right. ... And now I'm an asshole about it.
Okay.
Like, and that's something I like about him, is just like, he's not going to be Gregory Peck, This Isn't Right. He's going to be, I'm going to be a fucking asshole because this isn't right. But his heart's always in the right place, I think, in a lot of ways. He's very naively idealistic, and that's something that I appreciate about
him.
As
a filmmaker? Or in terms of the characters that he plays?
I think in terms of a lot of the characters that he plays.
Okay.
Also, I do think it's interesting that he's willing to play against his charm, and he's a very charming guy. He can be very charming in movies. If you've seen him in interviews, it's fascinating to see him counterpointed in interviews, because he seems so smart and self-aware, but then he makes a movie like The Postman where it's like anything but self-aware.
It's a crazy yeah. mix of like yeah. ugly, post-apocalyptic, dark, and then this sweeping score that's supposed to be heroic.
It's a good score.
And this speechifying dialogue and this crazy optimism about yeah. the postal service and slow motion shots of him riding by and picking up a letter, which you can't help but laugh at.
That's Are there... his son. Did you know that?
I did not, but yeah. that makes sense. Let me ask you this, because yeah. my favorite Costner is when he leans into his charm. Like, okay. that's Money in the Bank.
Like Bull Durham.
Like Bull Durham. Like yeah. Tin Cup. Like The Upside of Anger.
Yeah,
like,
he's great in that.
So great, yeah. right? Like, rumpled, yep. breezy Costner, mm-hmm. Money in the Bank.
Yeah.
The movies where he's actively working against his charm, as you say, I find them interesting. Mm-hmm. I mean, even Dances with Wolves, I think, does it to a degree. Waterworld, definitely. Postman, definitely. Are there actors who you think can successfully do that?
Can play against their charm?
Yes.
I think Denzel Washington's an example of one.
How so? Like, in what movie? Like Training Day? Because he's incredibly charming in Training Day. He's charismatic.
Like in The Hurricane, maybe.
Okay.
Like, he can play, like, some, he could do some, turn in some really good performances. Like, Man on Fire, I think, is a good performance, and he's not being charming in that. He's being kind of more stoic.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm reaching for an example just because...
No, yeah. I'm just trying to... Because I'm thinking of yeah. Tom Cruise in The Mummy, that garbage movie from earlier this year.
Yeah.
He's trying to do it.
Yeah.
He's trying to do the thing where he plays against his charm, and it is a failure.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to figure out if there are actors who can do it.
No, but I don't think that... Tom Cruise doing that in The Mummy is the same thing as what Kevin Costner is doing in Waterworld, or another example I'll bring up is Open Range.
I like that movie.
I love Open Range.
Yeah, it's good.
I love Dances with Wolves. I love Open Range. Postman. Love is not the word I would use. So Tom Cruise in The Mummy is playing like a jagoff.
Right.
Kevin Costner in Waterworld is, how do I put it? I mean, he's just a fucking weirdo. Like, he's like an asshole.
He's an asshole.
He's an outcast. He's not trying to be like goofy mean. He's trying to be mean.
Yeah.
Like, he's
throwing kids off of boats.
One of the things I love about Open Range is there's such a, like, two opposing forces pulling at each other in that movie, especially in that performance, because I can't tell you how many scenes in that movie he and Annette Bening have where he's like, I really want to settle down with you, Kate, but don't settle down with me because I'm a murderer. And then she's just like, oh, well, there's good and bad and everything. And he's just like, yeah, but the murder part's a lot worse. And then she's just like, okay, I'll listen to you, Charlie Waite. And then he's just like, well, don't rush into things. Like, maybe think about it. And then she's just like,
title for Open Range was Mixed Signals. Yes.
And then she's just like, okay, well, maybe I'll think about it. He's just like, I'm going to kill a lot of people today. And then she's just like, well, I bet they did something bad. He's like, not all of them. And then she's just like, all right, well, collateral damage and stuff. He's just like, I'm a bad person. Stay away from me. And then she's just like, okay, I'll stay away from you. And then he shows up 10 minutes later and he's just like, hey, I miss you. I mean, like, that's Open Range.
He texts her, you up?
Yeah. Yeah. It's like barnyard booty call. So
another alternate title for Open Range.
Yeah. So there's a lot of stuff I like about Open Range. That's one of the things, is just how weird Costner is in these movies. Costner also just has not in a toxic masculine way, which I've heard him be called toxic masculinity, which I do not agree with. I think he's way too romantic to be toxic, and I don't think that he's... I think when he's playing chauvinist, he's not glorifying being chauvinist. But one of the things I like about him is he's just, like, a guy's guy. He's, like, not like Chris Pratt, where it's, like, somebody that I would be friends with at the fraternity. Like, Kevin Costner is, like, a guy who, when he was 15, acts like a 35-year-old. Like, he's just an adult. And that's something that I like about him. He's like the type of guy where it's just like, you don't want to say like, hey, let's go out and, you know, like go to Buffalo Wild Wings. You want to be like, yeah, let's go buy watches and talk about life.
See, in some of these movies, though, I just feel like he's a guy who just wants to be left the fuck alone.
Sure. Yeah. I see that, too. But...
But the movie doesn't, like, the language, I would too, but the language of the postman, like, doesn't seem to acknowledge that.
I don't even know if that's what he is in the postman. It's
like postman?
It's like that's what he should be.
Right.
But, like, the whole thing in the postman.
He changes from scene to scene.
Yes, it does. Like, in the postman, it's basically like, he's like Michael J. Fox in The Secret of My Success, where, like, people are just like, want your semen. And then he's just like, right. What is going on?
Right? The notion that, you know, he took the uniform off of a dead person and then becomes a symbol of hope and is essentially a fraud is an interesting idea that, once again, is never explored.
Yeah, they never, like, call him on. There's no character who ever
really fesses up to it,
like,
at one point, and it means nothing.
It's like everything you represent is a giant lie.
Right. Because the symbol has already taken hold to such a degree that, like, it doesn't matter.
And it happens so uniformly and so fast. Like, everybody
is just,
like... Oh,
my gosh. As soon as,
like,
they're like, oh, there's a postal service? Yeah, we're all in.
Yeah. Yeah, it's weird.
It's... Everything about it is super weird.
Do you think if the movie was longer, they would have more time to explore
Please
this?
Please don't talk about it being longer. Please.
While we wait for that, Night 3 of Hanukkah.
Oh, my gosh. This is exciting.
You can't have fun during the holidays.
No.
Without a pack of Rogue One trading cards.
Yay!
Yay!
My least favorite new Star
Wars
movie.
Oh, my God, you're welcome!
Thank you!
Oh, my God.
Let's see who's inside.
I'm willing to bet you a buck you get a K2SO.
You think so?
Yeah.
I sure hope I get a Riz Ahmed, because what was his name? Shore Troopers Prepare.
Oh.
Patrolling the Scarif Shores.
I remember that part.
Ready to depart.
Who isn't?
and actually directed by Tony Gilroy. Oh my gosh, I can't believe that's a card.
What?
Chirrut Imwe is the last one.
You got a Chirrut Imwe rookie card?
Yeah, and sweet. He was my favorite character in the movie, yeah. So I'm kind of glad that I got this card.
Did you
card,
see Gareth Edwards in Last Jedi? Did you see his cameo?
No, did he have
He's
one?
In the trench on the salt planet.
Really? Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Nice little call out. Was yeah. Tony Gilroy the guy next to him?
I don't know what Tony Gilroy looks like.
I don't either. But
he probably looks like Dan Gilroy a little bit.
Is Dan... Wait.
Bros.
No, I know. But Tony Gilroy is the one who directed Rogue One, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just making sure I have that right. Yeah. You know, there's so many things wrong with The Postman. And again, I'm not ready to just say, like, this is a garbage movie and one of the worst movies ever made. Mm-hmm. Again, I get that it smacks of hubris. I get that when a filmmaker puts himself out there to the degree that Kevin Costner put himself out there in this movie, both as a vanity project and in this movie's sort of nakedly shameless sense of optimism.
Yes.
That people are very quick to say, this is garbage. I reject this. I guarantee a lot of the people who call it one of the worst movies ever made have not seen it.
I agree with that.
It's just a thing that we say. But
it's the most positive post-apocalypse movie I've ever seen.
It's one of them.
One thing that this movie reminded me of a lot, and I don't know if you've seen this, but did you ever see the Bruce Campbell sci-fi movie called Alien Apocalypse?
Nope.
It's a lot like that.
Interesting.
In a weird way.
All right.
Because it's all about... aliens are basically like a ruling force. They take human slaves and they make them work in like mines and things like that. And then it's just a revolt against them. So it's very much like the townspeople need to get together and then they pretend like that they're, you know, there's hope of a president out there who's going to come and like help them with reinforcements and stuff like that. So yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think. Might be commenting on the Postman a little bit. I was surprised to see while I was watching the Postman that I'm like, this is Alien Apocalypse. So.
There's two major issues that I have with the movie. I have a lot of issues with the movie, but here are two big ones.
Yeah.
One is the screenplay, which I think as it goes along has more bad lines than any movie can withstand.
Yeah.
There's an insane number of just awful lines in this movie.
What's an example of an awful
line? The one that I always refer to is Olivia Williams, who I believe this was the movie that put her on my radar.
It was before Rushmore.
Yeah.
And Sixth Sense.
This was the first thing I think I'd ever seen her in. And she's not particularly well served in this movie, but is anyone really? Mm-mm. You mentioned Giovanni Ribisi earlier. He has a role in this movie.
It's one of his Rod Steiger performances.
It's one of his performances that's like he has a real tendency to lean into his other sister side.
Yeah.
And I don't know why he turns every character into a variation on the other sister.
Because he's good at what he does, Dad. I'm good at what I do.
So his character in The Postman is very much...
That's how he gets his cheddar. I like how James Russo's on hand to get mauled by a lion.
Like, what is this movie?
In like one of those... And it's shot so weird. It's shot in like... hazy stutter photography.
Why do people act like they never knew that the postal service was a thing, but like they all know what vampires are? Why did that get passed down but not the postal service?
Yeah. Also, what rep theater did they salvage film prints of Sound of Music, right? And Universal Soldier? I take it Sound of Music was like the matinee and Universal Soldier was the midnight.
Yeah, it's like not that far in the future, so I don't know why. Anyway, the screenplay. So the one that I always point to is Olivia Williams telling the postman in one of the many moments of deification of Kevin Costner and the Postal Service, "You give out hope like it's candy in your pocket."
Yeah.
That is...
I understand that, though. Like, you and I do that with content every week.
I'm trying to read more lines. I mean, the fact that there's a character named...
I like when he pushes Ford Lincoln Mercury against the wall and he says, how much mail can a dead postman deliver? And I'm like, probably the small amount of mail that we have to deliver.
The whole Ford, Lincoln, Mercury thing. Again, I like Lorenz Tate, but what are we doing?
In this movie, he's...
What are we... I mean, no actor can overcome Ford, Lincoln, Mercury.
No. What did you think of Tom Petty? Playing Tom Petty.
Pretty embarrassing. May he rest in peace.
Yeah. It was nice to see him.
Sure, but the whole, like... Yeah. Are you famous? I was once. Like, don't come around here more.
What if he goes, he's like, I wrote a song about you. Goes a little something like this. And then he goes, because you got a heart so big.
I love that song, by the way.
You could crush General Bethlehem.
Okay. So that's the segue. There's so many. There's
Will Patton. What do you think of Will Patton?
That's where I'm going. Okay. I'm trying to read other postman quotes, and I'm upset that, like, the daughter's name being Hope is depressing.
Yeah.
I should have written these down, and it would require sitting through all 3 hours of The Postman again, which I'm not ready to do yet because I still have postman traumatic stress disorder. But I. The quotes on IMDb are not doing it. They don't even have candy in your pocket on here.
What?
Like, somebody's sleeping on the fucking job here, right?
God.
So I would have to watch it again to write down the quotes, and I'm not willing to do that at this juncture. But the fact that there is a character named General Bethlehem.
Yeah.
In addition to this movie having a screenplay problem, I think this movie has a little bit of a Will Patton problem. I like Will Patton. I'm happy to see Will Patton show up in movies.
Yes.
He is shockingly bad in this movie.
I just want to say that I didn't know that I needed this, but I've been waiting for like 20 years to just sit down with a friend and have a Will Patton conversation.
All right.
Like, he's just been a guy who's consistently there.
Yep.
Never really thought twice about him in The Punisher or in No Way Out or in Armageddon.
He's not well served in The Punisher, but I...
Or in Remember the Titans or anything like that.
I think he's Armageddon's secret weapon.
I like Will Patton.
Yeah.
I'm a fan of Will Patton.
Yeah.
I don't think he's that bad in this movie. Oh. I think he's pretty entertaining.
Man.
The character's ridiculous, but I mean, you know, everybody in this movie's a little ridiculous.
I mean, it's...
Why do you think he's so bad?
Maybe it's not his fault. He's given a lot of really bad dialogue where he's yelling about laws and he's quoting Shakespeare. Mm-hmm.
You want a war?
I mean...
I'll give you...
Cry havoc! And let slip!
My mind is bad.
He's so over the top, and no one else in this movie has that energy that I think it stands out, and it becomes one more bad element in a movie that has a lot of different bad elements. You have a lead who's kind of just a wet blanket, right? Mm-hmm. He's a poorly defined character that Costner never fully commits to playing because there's no part to play. He just kind of shows up and he's like, hey, everybody, I'm Kevin Costner. Need me to ride a horse?
It's definitely one of those movies where it's like you could feel that he's busy with directing and other duties where he kind of just phones in his performance.
Yeah, there's just no... He doesn't even really have a part to play.
Yeah.
And Will Patton apparently goes the other direction where he's like, Costner is not holding up his end. I'm going to act for the both of us. He just is so big that he's in a different movie.
I'm going to try my Will Patton impression.
All right. I'm kind of excited.
I don't think I can do it.
No.
But I'm going to...
Damn it.
I want to say the things that he's going to say.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
this
is how I feel like it went on set.
All right.
Costner's just like, I don't know, Will. I don't think it's working. I think I need to focus more on the producing and directing and maybe just kind of ease in on this performance a little bit. And he's just like... I'll push it a little further. He's just like, I got the juice.
He does, by the way.
Yeah.
He does have the juice. He has a little too much juice in this movie.
Yeah. I'll give it a little oomph.
The guy, what's... Is it... This movie's rated R, right?
Oh, for sure.
Okay. Because, it's ugly.
It's got boobs in it.
It does have boobs, but, like, you could get away with boobs in a PG-13. But it's the violence that I think...
Yeah, there's boobs in Dances with Wolves.
Yeah, but those are historical boobs. That's different.
Historical boobs, much better than Crisis boobs.
Yes, exactly.
Whiskey don't dig on Crisis News.
Right, but Titanic historical boobs. Yeah, no historical problem. Boobs. PG-13.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Postman, post-apocalyptic boobs. I'm sorry. That's an R.
Frontier boobs is just like, how do you think we got here?
Exactly. Boobs. Right. Exactly.
It's like denied history.
The violence, right?
Yeah.
But again, you have this movie that is trying to be so positive, and it's not that I think the score is bad. The James Newton Howard score is bad. I just think it's so at odds with so much of the darkness of the movie. This is a movie where, like, a dude gets his head smashed in with a rock, right? And then 2 seconds later, am I confusing it with another movie that I just saw?
Which guy?
I swear someone gets his head bashed in with a rock.
Maybe. I don't remember that.
I could have been watching it. Maybe it's a different movie.
You
I just
watch
watched
it again.
I guess I'm going to need to.
Yeah.
But I just remember being like, wait, how do we cut to now the sweeping score and we ride across the desert after we just... No, there's no desert, actually. But after we just, like... bashed a dude's head in the fight scene.
Yeah, but they do that in, like, Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. They do stuff like that.
I mean, the whole beat where, you know, I don't love this scene in Robin Hood where we get him in prison.
Yeah.
And then he escapes and he becomes Robin Hood. That's how the movie opens, essentially, is with him in
Robin
prison.
Robin of the Hood.
And in The Postman, we get a whole section of him being... a prison and part of the general's camp, and it's the
He's
movie's so weirdly episodic, but it doesn't feel like A ever leads to B ever leads to C. Like, there's no sense of real urgency ever. It's just like we kind of drift from thing to thing.
Yeah.
So when we get that whole sequence where they're shored up in the cabin while he's healing from his wounds, I don't even really feel like he and Olivia Williams get closer during those scenes. It's just time passing.
I think it's really weird that he just co-opts this guy's family. 'Cause, like,
yeah.
I know that they invite that. Sort of, because
it is his kid.
They ask for him to
Hope,
impregnate her,
right?
He,
pretty quickly too.
Pretty quickly,
like upon meeting him.
Yeah, but I mean, it's, you know, they're dancing. It's music. You know,
true.
Stuff,
yeah,
stuff
yeah.
like that happens. I mean, so I don't go to dances anymore. Too many requests. And they always called me the postman because I delivered. So, yeah, and then the husband dies.
Of course.
So
to
Costner
clear
can
right.
clear the way conscience-free, right. or, you know, no guilty conscience to, I think we need a princess joke.
Yeah. What is a bunny's favorite game?
I don't know.
Hopscotch. What did Rapunzel say when she arrived in town? Here I am. These are garbage jokes.
Man. I think you earned yourself a drink, mate. Have 3-pack of Sunny D.
Thank you.
They're jammers, guys.
Juice Sunny D juice boxes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It could either be retro packaging or just old. I don't know.
It's from when The Postman was in theaters.
You hand out Sunny D like it's rays from the sun.
The dude from Seinfeld, when he's about to be murdered, when they're, like, all captured, one of George's bosses from Seinfeld.
Oh, Daniel Von Bargen.
Yes.
Yeah, from Lord of Illusions.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
He yells out, like, ride, postman, ride, or something. There's just shit like that does not sit well with me in this movie, because the movie doesn't earn those moments.
No, they seem very arbitrary. Like,
the movie acts like it's earned those moments, but it never earns those moments.
Yeah, he's the one person in town that doesn't immediately fall into line with the postman.
Right.
But then when the postman's leaving after, like, crashing there for one night, he's just like, oh, fuck it, here's a letter, deliver it, please. I don't know. I mean, you just can't... Costner's like a 5-alarm charm...
Not in this movie.
Fire, in general.
I don't have the same blanket love of Costner, so for me, like, he needs to bring it. And if he doesn't, I'm just like, why are you the center of this movie?
What year did Blanket Love come out?
That was 2003.
Okay, so it's Dragonfly era. Okay.
Era. I never saw Dragonfly.
I don't think anyone did.
Did you?
No.
If Costner's your favorite actor, how have you not seen every one of his movies?
I have some gaps. So,
Karina? No, that's Ray Liotta.
Yeah, come on.
What am I thinking of?
Do that fucking
he has Karina, a... What's Karina. His comparable? What's his...
Black or White?
No. From that period, I feel like he's got
I don't know.
The War, maybe?
Sure.
Okay.
That's another one. He also has a martyr thing where he thinks, like, no, I deserve to die. Like, he has a lot of I deserve to die movies.
What is that?
The War is another one where he's
he dies,
like,
in the war?
Yeah, where, it, like, spoilers
you ruin it
for the
me.
War. Where, like, him, if I'm remembering right, because it's, I haven't seen this, it's like 95 probably. But, like, yeah, like a mine collapses on him.
Oh, boy.
And then, like, you got the Guardian where he drowns, but he becomes, like,
never
a
saw the Guardian either.
Saves people.
Well, Waterworld.
You've got a friggin'
Perfect World.
Perfect World,
which he's great in.
Perfect World.
Okay, now there's really that's good. That's him.
Message
acting.
In a Bottle. He drowns.
Never saw a Message in a Bottle.
What else?
Perfect World, by the way, is him acting against his charm to an effective degree. That works.
I think he's twisting his charm. He's still charming, but he's charming.
Okay, so maybe that's what we're talking about, because I think that's what Denzel does as well. He twists his charm, but is still charming, and that's what Costner does.
Yeah.
Quick story about the war. I'm sure you already know this, but when Erica used to work at Blockbuster Video, Doug used to call there a couple times a week, and every time would just ask if they have The War with Elijah Wood.
That's awesome.
Then so he would call just to ask that question.
I like Doug even more now. No, I don't know. I mean, Costner, like, okay. I think a lot of the reception to The Postman is because, I'll say it's 50-50 this, because 50%, I mean, like, it's, come on.
You can't deny that the movie, like, does not work.
Yeah. It's like, come on, and it doesn't work in a way that's so, the hubris is just right there for you. But I think 50% of it is that Costner had a really good run for a while.
Yep.
And it's like the Jennifer Lawrence thing now, where they do a couple of movies that people don't like as much.
Right.
And then they're bad now. And I think
people resented him for Waterworld, even, because, again, it was so expensive.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, viewed as such, like, a turkey, even though I think it made money. Yeah. I mean, it was a success.
I watched part of an interview he did with, like, SAG to a bunch of young actors and stuff like that. And two things that were interesting. One was about Waterworld. One was about The Postman. They brought up The Postman and Waterworld kind of combined, because they're like, well, this is kind of when you kind of had your first taste of Hollywood sort of turning on you, and how did you feel like that? And he talks about it, like, you know, in a very open way, and in a very, like, just kind of regular guy way, where he's just like, yeah, it hurt, but, like, I'm a kind of guy who pushes all of his chips in almost every time, so this was, you know, the first time where it jumped up and it took a chunk out of me, and like, I had to expect that was going to happen at one point. But the thing that I think that I liked the most about it was they asked him that question, and his first response was, he's like, I don't know, I like those movies.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah. And that's one thing that
I think is
nice about him, is that you never feel like he's doing something for, like, a commercial reason. Like, he's doing something for a deeply artistic, personal, passion reason.
Yeah, he's not a cynical dude.
That's why he does all of these Westerns, because even though they're out of fashion as a genre, like, he likes Westerns, or he likes the romanticism of baseball. That's why he keeps, like, going back to that and everything like that. So that's one thing I like. The thing that he was talking about with Waterworld was that he's like, don't get me wrong, in the United States it kind of failed, but, like, worldwide, that movie's really liked. Like, a lot of people really liked that movie. Yeah. And also, it didn't lose that much money in the end of the day. It was just that the movie was the first one to go over $150 million in budget. So that became the bullseye on it.
Right.
He said, like, you know, Terminator 2 was like $120 million. But, like, studios were just, like, saying, like, no, that you can't say your budget is over X amount. So I think he said the budget was supposed to be like $150 million, and they're just like, we'll give you $149 because they didn't want that, like, black mark on them about the $150 thing.
Right.
So, I mean, it's just so silly with that. But the thing I find fascinating about it is, okay, so he had that run. It was like No Way Out, and then he had Untouchables and Bull Durham and Field of Dreams, and then Dances with Wolves, Robin Hood. Revenge didn't really do too well, but then The Bodyguard. A Perfect World was the first one that it was well received, but it underperformed. Then he
But that's not a super commercial movie.
No.
So that's a movie you do more for, like, respect, I think.
I think it could have been commercial, though, because it was Eastwood coming off Unforgiven, who was his follow-up to Unforgiven, and then it was Costner coming off that wave.
Yeah, I don't think that movie ever could have been commercial.
But then you have Wyatt Earp, which came after Tombstone, which sucked a lot of the life out of that, and also it just wasn't that good of a movie.
I need to watch it again. I did not dislike it.
It's watchable.
Yeah.
It's better than Postman. Then you had The War, then you had
Then you go hits a real slump.
But then he had Tin Cup in between
Oh shit.
Waterworld and The Postman, and I forgot about that.
Is Tin Cup 96?
Tin Cup is 96.
Okay.
And then he, after The Postman, he kind of went into jail for a little while until Open Range. He was doing a lot of like weird, shitty movies until Open Range.
Kind of that Dragonfly was his comeback. Period, right?
And then his acting comeback. And this is one thing he doesn't get enough credit for. Not that he needs to get credit for it, but I'm going to give him credit for
it.
A lot of actors, like, even ones I like Tom Cruise, are too proud to take a lot of supporting roles. Kevin Costner recognized, I'm probably not the leading man anymore.
Yeah.
I'm going to be like one of the best supporting actors that you could get. And he just does that now.
Yeah.
And anytime he pops up in a movie, I'm always just like whether it's Upside of Anger or whether it's,
He just showed up in Molly's Game.
How was he in Molly's Game? Does he have anything to do?
No.
I saw there was a meme that the Music Box tweeted out a few months ago, and they say, like, Costner always benching. And you, I didn't notice this, but they had, like, probably, like, 15 movies where they showed pictures of him just sitting on a bench.
He might be great in Molly's Game.
Yeah.
He was on screen with Jessica Chastain. I literally have no idea if he even spoke in that movie.
Yeah, my eyeballs kind of fall out of my eyes when I hear or anything from Jessica. She's an amazing woman. So,
yes.
But even, like, he'll do some lead performances nowadays.
3 Days to Kill.
Stuff, not even 3 Days to Kill. But some of his stuff is, like, really fucking good. Like,
okay.
McFarlane USA is a really good movie.
I haven't seen
it. It's a really good sports movie.
Yeah.
Draft Day is one of the 4 best movies of the past 5 years.
What are the other 3?
We talked about this on the 400 episode. It was Star Wars The Force Awakens,
right.
La La Land, Creed, and Draft Day.
I disagree with all of those choices.
What are you going to get? What? Spotlight? I love Spotlight, but give me a break. It's no Draft Day. Like, if you go into an Academy screening and you're like, fine, we'll play Call Me By Your Name.
Yeah.
If you guys want to stick around, we'll watch Draft Day.
Yeah.
People will stick around.
Yeah.
Because Draft Day is fucking... It's Ivan Reitman's second best movie.
I'm not on board with this. Draft Day, triple feature for me. Raid 2, Draft Day, Oculus.
What a fantastic day.
Knocked them all out right in a row.
Nice.
Yeah, it was all right.
All right. What was I going to say?
Something about The Postman being great.
Yeah, The Postman's really
Well, it's weird because you're saying a lot of like semi-positive things about The Postman, and I feel like you didn't have to be so nice.
Can I? All right. There's a point in the movie where it's this we need your semen scene. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You read your pages.
It's Christmas Day.
You show up.
You're going to see the new 3-hour Kevin Costner post-apocalyptic Western. You're just waiting around for the we need your semen scene.
Yeah. So I was watching the scene. I was paying attention to the story, paying attention to the characters, whatever. Then I start noticing in the background the music that's playing. And I'm like, this song sounds really familiar. I don't know what it is, but it sounds really familiar. And it's just an instrumental version of You Didn't Have to Be So Nice by The Lovin' Spoonful.
Right.
And I was just like, this is really lovely. Like, I really thought it was, like, just this nice cover of it. And then later on, they have, like, a hoedown dance, and they play Come and Get Your Love, and I'm just like...
Which is super weird.
It is, but it's a great fucking song. Like, even when Rhea McCoy did it in the 90s, it's like, So...
It does not make sense in the context of that scene for me.
But then, at the end of the movie, in the closing credits, there is a duet between Amy Grant and Kevin Costner... Of what's the name of his band? The West, the Dark West,
Know. If it's not Dog Star, I don't know.
So he's got a band, the Modern West. Kevin Costner and the Modern West.
Dennis Quaid and the Sharks.
Yeah.
Lieutenant Dan Band.
The Bacon Brothers played across the street from my apartment, and I did not go because they were asking for an arm and a leg to see them. But I probably could have met Kevin Bacon afterwards.
Probably.
Because it's fucking Metropolis.
Yeah, like, right.
You can meet anybody in Metropolis.
Yeah, I think so.
So anyways, they played that, and then you sent me a YouTube link of the music video, and goddamn if I didn't listen to the song and then went on Amazon Music and listened to the whole soundtrack, and now I just kind of like the song. Like, I don't think that he is the MVP of that song.
No.
but it's still the same instrumental version of You Didn't Have to Be So Nice from the movie,
right?
Just with the lyrics overlaid. And I'm an Amy Grant guy. I like Amy Grant, baby, baby.
All right.
You know?
Okay.
Come on.
I'm not, I might not, I, we might part ways. It reminds me of when the instrumental Everything I Do It For You kicks in during Robin Hood. And you're like, this is beautiful. And then the Bryan Adams one comes on at the end. And you're like, yeah.
Yeah.
Doesn't have the same effect here, I don't think.
No.
And I think when I saw this, I don't think I knew that Kevin Costner had a band at that time, because this is sort of pre-internet, or I certainly wasn't on the internet, so how would I know that he had a band?
Yeah.
So for me, it was just an extension of the vanity that went into the project, where it was like, and I'm going to sing on the song, not thinking that he had any musical abilities whatsoever, that he was just like, yeah, fuck yeah, I'll sing, I'm Kevin Costner, I could do anything. Like, it's fine, it's not great.
Yeah.
But again, when you think about the song, where it's just like, you didn't have to be so nice, I would have loved you anyway. It's just everyone's just willing to love the postman, regardless of whether or not he's a piece of shit, which he kind of is.
Yeah, you brought up early in the show the statue dedication at the end of the movie.
Yeah, yeah. What a weird choice.
Two things. Well, obviously the Bed of Roses thing, which is wonderful. Second thing is, I love that at the dedication, as if he didn't know that's what the statue was going to be, there's the grown version of the little boy, and he goes, that's me.
Yes.
And then also, where is that statue today, and can I have it?
It looks so much more civilized, like the flash forward with the dedication. Like Mary Stuart Masterson basically just like bought her clothes at Marshall's or something. Yeah, like,
they've made a lot of advancements from 2013 to 2044.
So I guess what I'm saying is, I can't believe that this shit took place 4 years ago. Yeah. What I'm saying is, like, is it, did the resurgence of the post office, is that what deserves the credit for restoring civilization? For, like, bringing back TJ Maxx, where Mary Stuart Masterson bought her clothes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I think it's a lot of things. I mean, like, if not for the postman, you would not have Amazon Prime now.
Okay.
I mean, you wouldn't have any of that
stuff.
Yeah. And then also,
how,
like,
else would you see Jumanji early?
Yeah. I don't know. Thank you, Kevin Costner.
Right?
Yeah.
Thank you, postman.
Yeah.
What is his name in this movie?
He didn't have to be so nice. the postman. He doesn't have a name.
This is fascinating to me, right? Again, it's like, what is this movie? What is this movie?
Present time.
Okay, last present?
No.
Because we're wrapping up our conversation here.
How many nights?
Four? That's 1, 2, 3, 4. So this is night 5.
Okay, I got you a Justice League sticker book.
Thank you.
They didn't have any stickers, though, at the dollar store.
You know what? You didn't have to be so nice.
Yeah.
I didn't know they still made these goddamn sticker books.
I used
to love these.
I had a Masters of the Universe one.
I had several that I loved.
Stocking.
And a stocking.
If you...
Dr. Poison. Oh, that's from Wonder Woman.
Okay, so I got you a Ray Tower puzzle.
Oh my gosh. This is too many things. You should be donating these to, like, Toys for Tots or something.
I should be donating these back to the dollar store I bought them at. If you want to, like, add up the grosses every weekend of the next Kevin Costner movie.
Yeah.
A calculator.
That is a giant calculator. Yeah. Thank you.
It's like if your eyesight gets even worse.
Yes. And, oh my gosh. Can I count to 17 million on this?
And I know that I haven't seen you do a video recently where you're playing the guitar, so I thought you might have lost it. So I got you
a little guitar. Thank you. With four strings.
Yeah, so serenade Erica tonight. I don't
might.
Know.
It's a little banjo. I could be a hipster.
Yeah.
Ryan Gosling style. Like, what was that? Blue Valentine. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Should we talk about how shitty that Hugh Jackman movie looks?
Oh my god.
Where Michelle Williams, I thought of it because Michelle Williams, like, who's better than this, is playing concerned wife, which is, of course, one of the only roles available to women in Hollywood.
Yeah. Do you think her whole family's gonna die in a fire?
We'll see. But
wherever
goddamn,
Michelle Williams goes, happiness doesn't follow. So I, for her, it's like, you didn't have to be so fire. One thing I like about the postman is it's part of the 90s Warner Brother period where they were very pro movie star, very pro director. That was your hook. It was this is the next Oliver Stone movie. This is the next Kevin Costner movie. This is the next Clint Eastwood movie. It was about the creators and not so much the IP.
Right.
And that's something that I miss a lot, especially in entertainment for adults these days.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
That great era that we always harken back to about the mid-budget.
Right. Drama. This was not a mid-budget. This was $80 million goddamn dollars.
Yeah, but like probably like a million of them weren't his.
Probably.
Yeah. Yeah,
probably.
Yeah.
So this is not a great movie,
no.
But it's also not the worst movie. And I think anyone with an interest in like post-apocalyptic movies or late 90s cinema
or
Kevin Costner or The Postal Service,
yeah,
or The Lovin' Spoonful,
yeah,
or Tom Petty,
mm-hmm,
or Scott Bairstow, who
he turned out to be a
was
bad person,
maybe going to be a thing for like 6 months. Wild America and this. What's his story?
He like statutory rape.
So. Oh yeah,
yeah, he can, so that's
go
why
get
he went.
Fucked.
That's kind of
right.
Why he went away.
Well, good. Yeah. He should, and I'm happy to hear that.
So awkward segue. I brought a Hanukkah dog.
Yeah,
and he's sing a song.
All right, let's hear it, Hanukkah dog. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, so here we go.
Hanukkah dog, you're fucking choking.
What the fuck?
How come the snowman's never dressed for Hanukkah? How come he's never wearing a yarmulke?
Uh-huh.
This
is still going. Hanukkah dog. That's how it ends? It doesn't resolve. Like, now I feel weird.
Well,
there needs to be another verse.
The dude who wrote the song got shot.
It ends on a bridge.
Yeah, it ends on a bridge.
That was almost the postman of Hanukkah dog songs. It just kept going.
Yeah, it was good. And then it just...
But it's like, mostly complaining that like snowmen aren't Jewish enough.
Are you kidding me? Like, Jewish people don't complain. I can say that I'm Jewish.
Where are all the Jewish snowmen? Asks Hanukkah dog.
I watched 10 minutes of a documentary on Amazon Prime called, like...
Thank you, Kevin Costner.
Something like what's the Knish? And it's, like, about, like, the New York accent. And
can that
just
be
like,
your new segment on F This Movie?
What?
What's the Knish? Just, like, 5 minutes every week. Let's go to Adam Risky with what's the Knish?
Yeah, okay.
Hey, everyone. What's the Knish with the postman?
I give out content like it's candy in my pocket. So, oh, and P.S., I said this on Twitter. I'm on a break from Twitter.
Yes, everyone. Leave him alone.
If you want to talk to me on the site.
Yes. Good.
But if... Because I get paid per comment. But if you want to talk to me on Twitter, I'm just not going to look because the world ruined Twitter for me.
Yeah?
It's not none of your faults individually, but the world ruined Twitter for me.
Would you prefer we move away from Twitter and back to a system where we handwrite letters and deliver them to one another? Who would deliver these letters?
Floyd Lincoln Mercury? Well, it depends if I'm in his region.
How many letters can a dead postman deliver?
I don't know. Probably less than a live one. I guess. I
that fucking scene, the slow motion where he grabs the letter out of the kid's hand while he's riding the horse.
Yeah. And then they come back to it for the last shot of the movie, and the kid's got this beaming smile on his face. By the way,
it's this movie in a nutshell.
That house looks like a house from 1997 where everybody else is living in like a mud hut.
Yeah.
It's weird.
Yeah. But again, how did this happen? It's only 2013. Like,
she's
shit
got, like,
fell apart.
She's got like bay windows.
Shit
and so,
fell apart fast.
Yeah.
And why was the postal service one of the first things to go? Very strange.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm just glad it's back.
Yeah, no, me too.
I mean, that was a dark 4 years.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
But we got, 2017.
Right.
Year we got back the post office.
Anything else you want to say about this movie?
No, just happy holidays to everybody.
I always enjoy the holiday episode.
Yeah.
Which was never officially a thing, but now we've made it one.
This was a good comeback for us for the holiday episode because it's a lot of fun, a lot of holly jollies. And and We really fucking sucked on that White Christmas show. I could be, all right.
But you know what? You guys, you left some good comments, and I just feel like you didn't have to be so nice.
Yeah, yeah. I remember while we were doing White Christmas, like, I could feel your seething apathy, where you were just
I just
like,
didn't know what to say about
like,
it. Yeah.
I just don't care. Yeah. And then, like, I was like, you know what? I don't really think I care either.
Not as much as we care about The Postman and The 12 Dates of Christmas.
Yeah.
Both of which we discussed more extensively than a veritable classic White Christmas.
Yeah.
A movie that is beloved.
Yeah. So next year, I mean, like, we've gone off Christmas movies to Christmas Day movies.
Yeah.
So I think we should just keep it going with a Christmas Day release.
Christmas like, Day 98. I think Shakespeare in Love.
Prince of Egypt, I think, was that.
I'm not doing that.
There's no landmines to step in there. I think. I think Stepmom, maybe?
Oh, God.
Patch Adams was Christmas Day.
I don't
Day.
Think I can do Patch Adams.
We might have to skip around.
Robin Williams
around.
Is gone. Hold on. I'm pulling up Christmas Day, 98. Oof.
Everything 98 was
Stepmom. I can't read this chart. The Thin Red Line, The Faculty, Stepmom, Mighty Joe Young, and Patch Adams.
Yeah, well, yes.
That's some weak sauce. So we may just go back to a Christmas movie. 12 Dates of Christmas, maybe? Give it its own show?
Maybe. No, but if you are celebrating Christmas, I'm jealous of you. Like, I got Christmas for a few years.
Yeah?
It was lovely. And then Trisha said no more. And then now I'm just like, got my Hanukkah stuff, and then that's it.
Yeah, so, yeah. Yeah.
Parental Guidance came out on Christmas.
Yeah, we could do a show on
could
that.
Could do a guidance show.
Probably. Anyway, thank you guys very much for listening. Thank you, Adam, for all these lovely gifts.
You're welcome.
And for watching The Postman. And,
I'm glad that I finally did.
Yeah, right? Yeah. It's another notch in your Costner belt.
Mm-hmm.
And thank you guys for listening. As always, you can find our content every day at fthismovie.com. We're on Twitter at fthismovie. Adam is not on Twitter. You can email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. We're on Facebook and Instagram, and we will put out a picture of all of Adam's gifts on Instagram for you to check out. Anything else?
I will be back on Twitter for F This Movie Fest. Until then, talk to me on the website.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to F This Movie.